Alanik's ship blinked out of existence and reappeared farther down toward the city, where Victory Flight was chasing off the fighters that had pierced through our other forces. The enemy ship sailed right past the place where she'd been, toward Kimmelin and Ned, who darted away. The ship pursued Kimmelin. Before I could say anything, Arturo was yelling at her over the radio to go into a dive, get out of there. She dove, but the enemy ship followed her, slicing her ship into three even pieces. The wreckage fell to the ground. She didn't eject, but she wouldn't have needed to. I searched for her Tanix in the falling wreckage, but I couldn't find him. I hoped he'd hyperjumped her out. "All flights," I said. "That pilot has mind blades. Take them down."
"We can't get close enough to use the IMP," Amphi said. "Quirk's our best shot and she's down."
"Netter," FM said. "Did Quirk make it out?"
"I don't know," Ned said. He sounded shaken.
The Cytonic with the mind blades dove again, this time taking off after Catnip. I found Catnip's slug, Whiskers, and instructed it to jump down closer to the city, below Victory Flight. Catnip disappeared. Our ships flew loosely around the enemy Cytonic, all trying to peg the ship with destructor fire without getting close enough to be torn apart by the mind blades. But the enemy ship rolled and dodged, evading their fire. I couldn't let this continue. I could get in my own ship and try to go after the Cytonic, but I imagined they had a lot more practice with those mind blades than I had, and possibly a lot more reach.
"All flights," I said. "Pull up."
All across the battlefield, ships shot up into the clouds, clashing with the superiority ships that had made it out of their carriers. Not all the Kitson flights obeyed, but those that didn't were far enough away from the Cytonic that they should be safe from the autofire above and below.
"Go,"
I told Snuggles. And I hyperjumped the platform directly below the Cytonic pilot. The Cytonic pilot immediately pulled up, accelerating to get out of the inhibitor field.
"Go,"
I said to Boomslug. Boomslug fired the hyperweapon in the direction of the pilot, but they reached the edge of the inhibitor field and hyperjumped away. I searched for them across the sky and found them, high above the planet, farther even than the carrier ships. Most of our forces were between me and them, but I could follow in an instant if I could only see where they'd gone. I looked up through the window at the clouds and was blinded by a blast of blue energy that poured down from the sky, striking the shield around Wandering Leaf, which sputtered and crackled. I squinted against the light. When it faded, I stared up at a large, newly arrived ship with an enormous cannon on the front of it. Scud. Scud.
"What is that?"
Juno asked. "It's a planetary weapon," I said.
"A weapon for planets," Juno said. "It seems wrong to invent such a thing."
"No argument here," I said. It looked just like the one we'd destroyed on Redon. It made sense that it hadn't been unique. They must have had the thing charged before they hyperjumped it in, which made a sick, reckless kind of sense. We could not let that thing fire on the planet. I didn't know how many Kitson that ship could destroy in one blast, and I didn't want to find out.
"Jerkface,"
Arturo said over the radio.
"I see it," I said. "All flights, clear the space around the cannon."
The flight split, going into evasive maneuvers and leading the enemy ships away from the cannon, which was fixed squarely on Wandering Leaf. They'd take out the platform and then Dreamspring. I had to destroy the cannon before that happened. The airspace between me and the cannon was clear. I still didn't know for certain if Kimmelin was okay, or if any of my friends had been caught in that energy beam, but there were going to be a lot of other casualties if I didn't act quickly. I focused on the space just below the cannon and hyperjumped the platform up. The auto turrets fired immediately, pummeling the cannon and the ship around it. Scud. This thing was terrifying from this close. Last time it was Rig who'd had to stare one of these down. I hadn't given him enough credit for it. The blue light was building again. I focused on the cannon, ready to tell Boomslug to fire. And suddenly, the vibration of the universe went dead. I could no longer feel the Cytonic inside the enemy ship, or the mines of Boomslug and Snuggles so nearby in the boxes.
Scud. The enemy Cytonics had put up an inhibitor, and I'd brought the platform right into range. It was the same thing I'd done to the Mindblade Cytonic, but they had a ship with an engine, and Wandering Leaf moved only by hyperjump. I was stuck here.
This seems bad, Juno said, his voice almost a squeak.
The blue light glowed brighter and brighter, and then the beam pummeled my shields again. The shield crackled and then blinked out, leaving the platform vulnerable to the next attack. I couldn't hyperjump out. I couldn't use the hyperweapon. I didn't have a starfighter on board, and Alanik couldn't come in to get me. I stared up into the mouth of the cannon as it once again began to glow with an eerie blue light.
Chapter 15. The auto turret continued to pound at the cannon. It was doing damage, but it wasn't going to disable the thing fast enough. I was going to get blown to pieces on this platform the moment it finished charging. Amphi, I said over the radio, I have to get out of here. The auto turrets are distracted. Can any of you dodge the fire and fly in to pick me up?
Netter's closest, Arturo said.
On it, Ned said. Follow me, I said to Juno. I scooped Snuggles, Boomslug, Bob the Comslug, and the inhibitor Tanex out of their boxes and took off at a full run toward the hangar. When I arrived, I watched through the windows as Ned pulled a barrel roll past the autofire. The turrets were focused on the ship with the cannons and were doing some impressive damage to the ship around it. Maybe they would be able to disable the thing before. The blue light grew even more blinding. Ned used his light lance to flip around one of the turrets and landed on the platform right outside the hangar. Juno's floating platform zipped along behind me as we ran up to Ned's cockpit just as he lifted the canopy. The noise of the autofire was deafening, and I dove into the cockpit behind Ned, straddling the back of his seat and holding on with both hands. Juno hovered beside Ned's seat, and the four slugs flattened their bodies against me. Ned pulled down the canopy and didn't even have time for a wisecrack before he took off again. The turrets were so focused on the planetary weapon that they didn't fire on us. But when we got far enough away that the vibrations returned, I had Snuggles hyperjump us several kilometers farther, just to be certain. The world flared blue as the cannon fired, the blast rocketing through Wandering Leaf, tearing it apart. The autocannons had taken out a good half of the superiority ship, and the cannon's light faded, no longer powering. We'd gotten rid of the weapon, but we'd lost the platform in the process.
Jerkface, FM said. Did the Erdale pilots all make it out?
They did, I said. No casualties. Just catastrophic damage.
Dude, I saved your life, Ned said. The least you could do is stop squeezing my pecs.
I dropped my arms from around Ned's chair. I hadn't realized I was holding on so tight or so awkwardly. Sorry, I said. Hang on, I'm going to transport us to my ship. My whole body was squeezed into a space so tight I wasn't sure how I was managing to fit. I'd only gotten in here on pure adrenaline. I directed Snuggles to jump Ned's ship to the beach next to mine, still sheltered under the cliff. Then I held on to her and had her hyperjump me, Juno, and Boomslug out of the cockpit. We landed in the sand outside my ship. There, standing in front of it, was Kimmelin, with Happy tucked into a sling across her chest.
Thank the stars you're okay, I said.
Happy teleported me to the other side of the beach, Kimmelin said. I was thinking about stealing your ship, but I guess you need it.
I do, I said. I didn't think for a minute that the Cytonic with the mind blades had been killed in that blast. They would still be out there, and I wasn't going to let them wreak havoc on our forces. If you take Happy home, you can get another ship and then hyperjump to Naga, I said. That'll get you back in the fight.
On it, Kimmelin said. Just be careful.
Scud. She'd been shot out of the sky. It was only Happy that had saved her. If you're too shaken up.
I'm fine, Kimmelin said.
Her hands were shaking, but she gave me a very forced smile.
I would feel much worse knowing you all were still up there without me. Happy, let's go home.
Kimmelin disappeared, and I climbed into my cockpit, Juno floating in behind me before I closed the canopy. My radio was going nuts.
Jerkface,
FM said over the radio. Are you okay?
He got out, Alanique said. He's down on the beach.
I'm here, I said. I lifted my ship a couple of meters, using my sensors to take stock of the battle. The planetary weapon was high enough in the atmosphere that it wasn't falling immediately to the ground, though the cannon was obviously destroyed.
Jorgen, Alanique said in my head, watch out!
With a great crunching of metal and shattering of glass, my ship ripped apart around me. A pair of mind blades sliced down into the dash, obliterating the canopy. I slammed down the altitude control and jumped out through the torn metal, pulling my slugs with me out onto the sand. I could feel the enemy cytonic over on the beach. They'd hyperjumped after me. Juno slid out through the broken glass and hid beside me, the ship between us and the enemy cytonic. It wasn't going to last for long. I felt more mind blades forming around the enemy cytonic, another volley about to rip through the ship to get at me.
Now would be a good time for that meditation, I said to Juno.
You are completely relaxed, Juno said.
I reached for the nowhere, skimming my mind over the surface. My birds formed again, little shards of death and nothingness, and I flew them with all my might over the ship toward the enemy cytonic. More blades flew at us, and I pulled Juno's platform down as I flattened myself against the ground. The enemy's mind blades dug into the ship, and I twisted mine around, jabbing at the enemy's cytonic where I could see them in my mind. The enemy's mind blades vanished. We'd had cover, but they hadn't, and when I peered over the ship, I found the body of a Dione with bright red skin lying bleeding on the ground.
Scud! I'd never killed someone at such close range before. I'd never had to stare at their bleeding body, knowing I caused that.
The sand beneath the Dione turned a strange dark blue color. The body didn't so much as twitch. My ship was thrashed, but the radio still worked.
Jerkface, you okay? Arturo asked.
Fine, I said, but I lost my ship.
We've got more company.
I looked up and found another carrier ship arriving. The Superiority had to be mustering their ships as they went, or else they'd underestimated what size force it would take to defeat us. But they were going to keep coming until they'd accomplished it. We were going to need to bring a lot more fire to this fight.
Amphi, I said, you're in command. Protect the city. I'm going to go check on Rig, see if we can bring more platforms.
Copy, Jerkface, Arturo said.
I picked up my slugs again, letting Boom Slug ride on my shoulder, and placed a hand on Juno's platform.
You want to come with me? I asked Juno.
Where you will go, I will go, Juno replied.
I would give the Kitson this. They were some of the bravest beings I'd ever met. Take me to Drape, I said to Snuggles.
Drape,
Snuggles said. Evershore and all of the ships above it disappeared. We passed beneath the eyes, and then suddenly I stood in a small room, much like the one on Wandering Leaf. The window looked out at the stars, over half a broken platform drifting next to the one where we'd landed, a large, defunct auto turret jutting up beyond it. The walls were lined with boxes.
Scud, there were so many of them. Tanix boxes from floor to ceiling, enough to house maybe 100 Tanix.
Jorgen, Rig said, how are...
We lost Wandering Leaf, I said. Planetary weapon destroyed it. Rig's eyes widened.
Is...
FM is fine, I said. I probably should have led with that. If it had been Spensa, that was the first thing I'd want to hear. But Winzik sent more reinforcements, and they may not be the last. We need to get more platforms over there.
Yeah, about that, Rig said. We have a small problem.
He gestured around him.
We don't know what any of these boxes do, much less where we would get enough slugs to power them. I sent the transport ship back to collect the Tanix on the base, but most of those belong to the remaining pilots.
I'm not sure they're going to part with them, not without a direct order from Stoff.
Stoff might give such an order, but the more I involved him, the more he'd feel he had to question me, which we did not have time for. The flights on Evershore could be dead by the time he made a decision. We'd also need the Tanix with those pilots if we had to bring in more reinforcements. I looked around at the boxes again. We'd sent expeditions down to the caverns to look for more slugs, but it was taking them time, and I understood why. The slugs tended to hide in the less inhabited areas, and I'd been too busy to go down myself.
Scud. Do you need to use all the boxes? I asked Rig. Can we figure out which one is the hyperdrive, then take the platform over and use the autocannons?
Maybe, Rig said. Even figuring out which is the hyperdrive is going to take time, though. The boxes aren't well labeled.
Rig looked around, wringing his hands. I was putting a lot of pressure on him and demanding instant results. Just because we'd been able to pull ourselves out of some tight spots in the past didn't mean he could produce miracles on demand.
I know you're doing your best, I said. I know you don't have enough time or resources. You're doing amazing work for us, and you've saved all our lives several times now. If you can't figure this out, it isn't your fault, but I need you to try.
Of course, Rig said. We're just not prepared for this.
What can I do?
Finding me more slugs would be nice.
Okay, let me see what I can do.
I moved out into the corridor. In the rooms along the hall, other engineers were calling to each other about the contents of each one. I peered through the nearest doorway.
Scud. More Tanix boxes. We were going to need a lot of help.
Rig's team had done so much for us. Now it was time for me to come through for them.
I found a bench in the corridor and sat down, Juno hovering over my shoulder next to Boomslug.
Do you have a meditation for searching? I asked Juno.
Not in this book, Juno said, though most of them begin the same. Breathe in, breathe out. You are now completely relaxed.
I wasn't, but I tried anyway. I reached out over the planet, searching for that vibration, the one I'd heard in my dreams.
The one that had called Spensa's great-grandmother to detritus to begin with, the reason we'd arrived here. It was still there. That resonance. We'd found some Tanix, pulled them up from their mushroom-infested caves, and brought them to live with us. But there were more down there, maybe a lot more.
Help, I called to them. We need help.
It was hard to pinpoint the individual minds of the slugs. It always was, before I became familiar with them, and when there were so many together. I could feel them listening to me, though. They were interested, but unmoved.
Hey, Rig said, get back here.
I looked through the doorway to see Fine, our original comm slug, wriggling out of his grasp.
Hey,
Fine shrieked at him,
get back here.
Snuggles disappeared from the crook of my arm and reappeared on the floor by Fine, and then picked him up and brought him to me.
I'm trying to concentrate, I said.
Sorry, Rig said. I think I figured out which box is the hypercom, but when I tried to test it, he went crazy.
Crazy,
Fine shouted. Rig looked at him. Fine wasn't usually this agitated.
Leave him, I said. Try again in a minute when he calms down.
Okay, Rig said.
Sure.
I reached down and petted Fine on his spines. This slug, in conjunction with Gil, had saved us on Sunreach. The least I could do was give him a little breathing room. I reached toward the planet again, down toward the vibrations that were actually Tanix. Many of them, beneath the surface, in caves we hadn't yet discovered. As I did, I felt that texture again, the strange bumps in the nowhere. Little ridges, all packed together in clumps below the surface of the planet. They weren't Tanix. They didn't vibrate with energy. Instead, they felt hollow. Like little vessels waiting to be filled. The way they grouped together, thousands upon thousands of them, was familiar somehow. The shape of the gatherings, the pattern.
Scud, those were the Defiant caverns. They were filled with thousands of
somethings. They couldn't be Delvers, could they? No, there was something else. Maybe stars. Were they people? I focused on one little raised vessel, drawing close to it, examining it. It was thinking. Its mother had set it here and told it not to move until it was ready to apologize for hitting its brother. But it would never be ready to apologize because its brother had really, really deserved it. My mouth fell open. I wasn't supposed to be able to do that, was I? Find the minds of non-cytonics? Listen to them? Juno, I said, in your books, are there meditations for communicating with other people? People who don't have cytonic powers?
You communicate with them all the time, Juno said. You use words.
This is not the time to be pedantic, I said. Could your cytonics talk to other people mind to mind? Juno's little brow furrowed.
I have read that a few achieved it, but if there are meditations for that, I have not read them. As you are just learning, it seems like it might be wiser to try to stick to the more general skills and not rely on those only a few were ever able to achieve.
That did seem wiser, and I hadn't communicated with that little kid, only listened to his thoughts. That could also be useful. Scud, the espionage possibilities were endless. Now, though, we had cities under attack on Evershore and a room full of empty Tanix boxes. I searched for the slugs in the areas around the caverns. I felt the vibrations, concentrated in the caverns away from people. Minds that were smaller yet louder, projecting themselves into the nowhere instead of remaining self-contained. I could figure out what to do with the rest of it later. For now, I needed to focus on the Tanix. I didn't know how many of them would come to me. They hadn't jumped on it the first time I asked, but maybe I could convince them. We need your help, I said. Please. Someone else reached for me, so near that I startled. Another cytonic mind joined my plea, and with it came an image. Mushrooms, caviar, friends, family, danger. The fear was so strong, though the mind that sent it was small. I saw all of us crowded together on Sunreach, holding on to each other while Gil took us home. Help. It wasn't a word so much as a feeling. Fine was helping me. He was making a case for me, though not in so many words. Telling the other Tanix he was happy here, that he liked us, that we treated him well and were good to him, that he cared about us. We care about you too, I thought at him. FM cared most of all. I knew she thought I was heartless sometimes, but I didn't want anything terrible to happen to them if I could prevent it. I didn't want anything terrible to happen to anyone. Maybe when I was speaking to the Tanix, I should focus less on the words. Everything was translated to thoughts through the nowhere anyway. That was how Alanik and I could understand each other. I focused on the idea of home, my home, and what it meant to me. The danger the superiority posed to this planet we all shared. The power we had to stop it, but only with help. It was more hope than I truly felt, but it was the message they needed, and it wasn't a lie. It was simply a different way to tell the story. Do better than we did.
Scud!
Rig shouted, and I opened my eyes as hundreds of Tanix all appeared in the corridor at once. They spilled into the various control rooms, all wriggling on top of one another. They were bunched together in groups, Tanix of many colors all rolling and sliding away from the hyperslugs they'd been huddled around. The ones who could hyperjump had answered me, and they'd brought friends. There were so many of them. Calm slugs and mind blade slugs, and the hyper slugs too, of course. Also the blue and green kind we'd found on Wandering Leaf, the ones that powered inhibitors. It made sense there were some on Detritus. There had to be a few somewhere, enabling our cytonic inhibitor. But there were more still. Wrinkled gray ones with black and white spines, several with spines that faded between the many colors of the rainbow.
and a strange set of mostly blackish ones that shone an iridescent blue under the control room lights. Some of the slugs were significantly smaller than the others, teal-colored with pink spines. Were those babies, or a smaller variety? The other humans and I all stared at the slugs dumbly. While we did, Boomslug, Fine, and Snuggles jumped into action. Snuggles teleported Boomslug right into the middle of the Tanix. Snuggles started touching slugs and hyperjumping them into the control rooms, gathering them in front of the boxes, while Boomslug herded groups of them together with the light touch of a blunt mind blade. The other slugs slithered out of his way, heading in the directions he sent them. Through the nowhere, I could feel Fine sending them all feelings and images. Danger, help, hurry. Rig said, I know I asked you for more slugs, but I really don't know which boxes to put them in. I have no idea what some of these slugs would do, even if we did figure out where to put them. Do your best, I said. They came to help, and we need all the help we can get. Chapter 16. Rig and the engineers started working on where to put the slugs. We'd only need a few to move our platforms, but I wasn't going to complain about having access to extras. Meanwhile, I reached toward Evershore to contact Alanique. Report? I asked her.
We're managing, Alanique said, but there were a lot of ships in that last carrier. I don't think we can handle another without reinforcements. Will Rig be able to move the platforms?
We've summoned help, I said, watching the slugs writhing about in the control rooms. But it's going to take some time. I can send over another few flights, but I'm worried that the enemy is going to keep coming. Do you think Rinnakeen would send some of your people to help?
I can make a case for it, Alanique said. It would be best if I went in person.
Ask Arturo if he can spare you, I said. I'll send in reinforcements as soon as I can.
Will do,
Alanique said.
Help, a voice said.
It came from near Alanique, somewhere on Evershore, the voices I'd heard before.
Help!
I didn't have time to help voices I didn't know. Enough corporeal people were in danger.
We know, the voices said. We want to help.
Who are you? I asked, but the voices faded again. I didn't have time to figure out where they were coming from. Gran-Gran had heard voices calling for help before she'd had what appeared to be a hyper-jumping accident. I still couldn't rule out a superiority trap, so I needed to focus on the help I knew I could trust. I used my radio to put in a call to command, asking them to get another 3 flights in the air. They agreed immediately. Apparently, Stoff hadn't rethought the length of the rope he'd given me to hang myself with. The other flights had all been put on alert, so it wouldn't take long for them to get in their ships, but I couldn't return to Evershore without them. While I was still here, Rig, I said, I don't want to scare you, but I'm going to try something. Rig poked his head out of the command room. Something more scary than dumping hundreds of unknown Tanix at our feet? Potentially, I said. Or maybe nothing will happen. I don't know.
So, either you're going to scare me or nothing will happen.
Right, I said. You can keep working. I just wanted to warn you. About potentially nothing. Stars, I shouldn't have said anything. It would have taken less time. Exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Rig gave me a very confused look and went back to examining the Tanix boxes. I closed my eyes and focused on the now overwhelming cytonic resonance all around me. The times I'd felt the strange ridges, I'd been listening to the nowhere the way Gran-Gran taught me.
Can I assist you, Shadow Walker? Juno asked.
It was only then that I realized that Juno hadn't remarked on the sudden arrival of a horde of gastropods, most of them bigger than he was. He didn't seem shocked by much of anything, taking it all in quietly through that eye slit in his armor. I don't know, I said. I'm trying that advanced thing you said wasn't wise.
You've done a great many things I thought were unwise, Juno said, but it seems to be working for you so far.
I hoped the trend continued. I focused on the vibrations. I located Boomslug and Snuggles, and they seemed to sense that I was reaching for them because they returned to my shoulders. They each had their own type of hum that was distinct, the way every human has a slightly different voice. It was almost like FM's music, harmonious in its own subtle way. I stretched my mind, trying to push past the vibrations, and searched for those ridges again, the ones that were so still and quiet. I gripped the edge of the bench in frustration. I'd done it when I wasn't meaning to. I should be able to do it on purpose. I remembered what Alanique had told me back on Redon. Try, Jorgen, she'd said. Stop focusing so much on what you aren't able to do and try. Hey, Juno, I said, can you read me one of those meditations again?
Of course, Juno said. Breathe in, breathe out.
I did that all day, every day of my life. But this time I tried to really focus on it. I tried to let go of everything I wished I could do, all the ways I could solve our problems if I were only better, stronger, smarter. Do better than we did, my mother said. For the moment, I tried to let go of whether I could. I listened to the slugs, to their vibrations, to their hums.
See yourself walking along a beach, Juno said. With each breath, the waves wash in and the waves wash out.
I tried to hear the ocean, to really be there, be present, and let go of the frustration of everything I couldn't yet do. In order to achieve control, Juno had said, you must first accept that you have none. I have none, I told myself. And for the first time, instead of terror and frustration accompanying that thought, I felt relief.
Feel the wind on your skin, Juno said. The heat of the sun as it burns down from above.
Above,
Snuggles said. And then, all at once, the ridges appeared around me. Not nearly so many as I'd felt down beneath the surface, only half a dozen moving about the platform. Mines, so quiet but no less real. I approached the one in the room nearest me and listened. This mind was working through a complex calculation, trying to figure out which of the wires from the Tanix boxes went into which of the many holo projectors labeled along the wall. Why couldn't someone have labeled these effectively? They were thinking. Did the labels disintegrate, maybe? Surely they had to have. Rig? I asked. The thought stuttered to a stop. Jorgen? Rig said. Are you inside my mind? Apparently, I said.
Okay, yeah, Rig said. This is deeply terrifying.
He paused.
Is this what it's like for you and Alanique all the time?
I laughed and let the link drop. Rig appeared in the doorway.
Jorgen, he said. What the scud did you do?
I think I did something really advanced, I said. Something Juno didn't think I should try.
Hmph, Juno said. I never said you shouldn't do it. I only said I thought there were better exercises to try first.
This one, though, seemed like it could be an asset at the moment. I radioed command. How are those flights coming?
They're in the air, the command staffer replied, working on the Lightlance connections before they give the go-ahead to hyperjump.
Excellent. I closed my eyes again, trying to see if I could still find the ridges. They were faint, but they were there, easier to recall now that I'd brought them up once.
Help!
A faint whisper, calling to me through the nowhere.
Help us!
The voices said again.
We want to help!
I sighed. I had no idea where those voices were coming from, much less if I should respond.
Listen, boy!
Another voice said. Scud. That was Gran Gran? She didn't answer, but an image formed in my mind, clear as anything.
a picture of the portal in the library, the strange wall with the lines, the gateway into the nowhere.
Gran-Gran, I said. What happened when you appeared near the portal? Where are you?
She didn't or couldn't answer.
Jerkface! Stedman from command said over my radio. The flights are ready for hyperjump.
Good, I said. Rig, how much longer do you think it will take you to figure out if we can move the platforms?
We're going to need time, Rig said. I can't tell you how much, but I can keep you posted.
And he could do it without a hypercom now. Okay, I said. I'll check in. I put a hand on Juno's platform and instructed Snuggles to take us to the beach on Evershore near the wreckage of my starfighter. We passed beneath the eyes, and then the sand of Evershore formed beneath my feet, the roaring of the ocean loud in my ears. I reached toward Platform Prime, finding the Tanix belonging to those flights. Corgi was among them, I thought, though I couldn't remember the rest of their names. FM would know. She knew them all. I gave the Tanix a clear image of Snuggles, and a moment later, three flights of ships light-lanced together in three distinct groups appeared over the sand, some of them extending out over the waves. Amphi, I said over my radio. I brought backup.
Platforms?
Not yet, I said. Three flights of ships. Can you get them up to speed?
Copy, jerkface, Arturo said.
My proximity sensors had been busted when the Cytonix slashed their mind blades through my dash. I looked up at the dark sky, trying to read what was going on with the battle. Scud, there were a lot of ships up there. Our side seemed to be holding their own, but we needed the backup badly.
Alanik, I said. Status?
Rinnakeen is sending ships to support us. He says the Kitson Alliance is worth the risk. I told him you were going to bring platforms from Detritus. Did I lie to him?
Rig is working on it, I said. Can you come support Arturo?
I'm on my way, Alanik said. I'll come back for the flights after they've had a few minutes to prepare.
Good, I said. Keep me updated.
Should we have brought you a new ship? Juno asked.
I'll get one later, I said. Right now, I need to have a look at that portal in your library.
Chapter 17.
The portal, Juno said. This seems like an odd time.
I know, I said, but I think it's important.
My mind blades could help in the battle, but we needed more than that. We needed Cobb's command expertise. We had to get him back in charge of this battle, of the war. The medtechs would be crowded into the library with Gran-Gran and Cobb, and I didn't want Snuggles to accidentally land us on top of one of the stretchers. Instead, I put a hand on Juno's platform and had Snuggles hyperjump us to a foothold I could see at the top of the cliffs. From this vantage, I could see the staircase that led to the library, and I had Snuggles make a second jump to land us outside the domed doors. I reached down below my knees for the handle, but found the door locked. I knocked, and there was a scuffling inside. A moment later, the door cracked open. On the other side, Kuna stooped down, looking out at us, and then opened the door the rest of the way.
I didn't think that Winzik would knock, they said, but one can never be sure.
Not Winzik, I said, crawling into the room. Kel and Winnow knelt between the long tables, which had been scooted together so the stretchers holding Cobb and Gran-Gran could rest on top. Several of the Kitson doctors sat on the stretchers, helping the medtechs monitor Cobb and Gran-Gran, while their transport pilot, callsign Zing, listened to the radio that was perched on a glass case filled with very small books. I could hear Arturo giving orders to the new flights. Hopefully, the additional ships would help us hold out a while longer while Rig figured out the platform.
How are they doing? I asked Winnow.
Stable, she said. You were right. Moving them didn't cause them to deteriorate this time. It's possible we could put them in a ship now.
I don't want to move them while we're under attack, I said, and I don't think it's the time that made the difference. I think it was the direction. Farther from that, I indicated the wall, and the med techs only looked more confused.
What is that? Kuna asked.
A portal to the nowhere, I said. I think. I was becoming increasingly sure that Gran-Gran, or her spirit, her soul, was behind this wall. I hoped Cobb was there with her, that non-cytonics could even exist in that strange place. We'd learned from the data nets that the Superiority had mines in the nowhere and ran entire operations to get a Clivity Stone. They probably used people who weren't cytonic on those missions. Of course, those people probably had bodies, so it wasn't a perfect comparison. Still, I suspected the Kitson cytonics were lost in there too. I didn't know how they could have survived all this time, but it seemed likely those were the voices I was hearing. I looked up at the portal, at the strange mass of interconnected lines running all over the wall. I could feel the vibrations of the nowhere, but not Gran-Gran's distinct signature.
Quiet, please, Juno said to the others. The Shadow Walker must concentrate.
Zing turned off the radio, and everyone else was silent. That was helpful, if a little presumptuous, of Juno. Usually he was the one chattering and distracting me. I considered the portal. Spencer said if I got too close, I might fall in. There was a draw to that, the idea that if I got lost in the nowhere, I could see Spencer again. But I had no idea if I would be able to find her, and I couldn't leave while Evershore was in peril, my friends in jeopardy. Instead, I reached out to the wall with my mind, inspecting it. Are you there? I asked. The answer was immediate.
We're here. We want to help.
The Kitson cytonics had been gone for centuries, Juno said. Cytonic powers were genetic, so if the Kitson cytonics had all been lost somehow, it made sense no more had been born. Though Spencer had said she thought living near a portal could change some people into cytonics. Why hadn't that happened to any of the lore keepers? An image struck me. Voices calling out of the portal for years and years, but there was no one left on the other side who could hear. Eventually, they stopped calling. Stars, was I imagining that? Or reading it somehow? I needed to reach them, but I didn't want to get lost in there. If I could find Spencer, could she find them in the nowhere and help me somehow? Together, maybe we could find a way to get them all out at once. I reached across the nowhere, searching for Spencer. I'd found her before, even if our connection was strange and distant. Something reached back. It was another image of Spencer cleaning a piece of a ship, a different one from the last time. I'd been too distracted before to think about the significance of that. We had ground crews for that, but Spin didn't have those in the nowhere. Did she have a ship? I thought she'd lost M-Bot on Starsight, and that was how the Superiority got hold of his holographic projector. The image was hazy, but the feeling that went with it was unmistakable. Loneliness. Loss. A fog of forgetfulness, like the stupor of coming out of an illness and not really being sure how many days had passed. It was so un-Spencer-like that it floored me. When I talked to Spencer before, she was right there, face to face with me. This was so much more distant, almost like a memory. As if it came from someone else, someone watching her from the outside. Who is this? I asked. I felt a tingle of amusement, maybe? And then an image came into my mind of a hyperslug sitting on the control panel of my starfighter.
Jerk face, it cried at me.
Doomslug? I asked. The tingle of amusement grew stronger. Huh. I'd apparently found a Doomslug in the nowhere. It made sense that she'd left with Spencer, but the fact that I could contact her and not Spencer herself was more than a little concerning. Is Spencer okay? I asked. The amusement faded, replaced by a sadness, a loneliness. Saints. What can I do? I asked. A trickle of doubt. Doomslug didn't know. I sent a picture of the portal in front of me. Do you know how to open it? I asked her. I heard nothing in response, except maybe a tiny bit of confusion. Either she didn't understand or she didn't know.
Are you learning anything from staring at the portal?
Juno asked.
I don't mean to interrupt a shadow walker at work, but...
Oh, I said, shaking myself. I was listening. To the silence? Winnow asked. No, I said. To a Tanix. But I don't think she's going to help us here. Though, if I could figure out how to open the portal, I still might be able to use it to get Spensa and Doomslug home.
Did you want to try another meditation? Juno asked.
Do you have any meditations for traveling to the nowhere? I asked.
There are many meditations for hyperjumps, Juno said. I could select one of my favorites.
Learning to hyperjump without a Tanix would be useful, but it wasn't what I was after here. Hyperjumping is moving through the nowhere, I said. I need to be able to move into it, and ideally back out again. That was the important part, really. Juno paused.
In and back out again sounds indistinguishable from through.
I blinked at him. I supposed it did. When we hyperjump, we pass beneath the eyes, but there's no one else there. This time I want to stop while I'm in there and help my people escape, and the kits and cytonics, too. Kuna and the medtechs all looked at each other. The medtechs, at least, seemed to think I had lost my mind. I was the scudding commander of this battle, and here I was staring at walls and claiming to hear things while everyone else was fighting. I would have thought the same thing in their place, and maybe they were right. If anyone got hurt up there while I was chasing shadows, it would be my fault. I'd never forgive myself.
You really believe that our shadow walkers still live, trapped on the other side of this portal?
Yes, I said.
Help us, they called.
I picked up Snuggles and she nuzzled my wrist. Juno steered his platform over to the glass case filled with books and opened it, extracting a volume. The thing was as thick as three of my fingers together, but no larger than the palm of my hand. It still looked enormous in Juno's paws.
Let me find one of those meditations.
I wasn't sure a meditation was what I needed, not for this. Instead, I took a step closer to the portal.
Shadow Walker, Juno said, are you sure you wish to get closer? If you truly believe it to be a portal into the nowhere.
Spensa said a cytonic could fall through it, I said. And maybe that's what happened to your people long ago. But if I don't at least try to interact with it, how can I reach them? I walked between the stretchers holding Gran-Gran and Cobb and moved up to the portal, careful not to step on any of the tiny tables or chairs or carts covered in books. I walked within arm's length of the portal and examined it. I could feel them. Kitson, many of them. I felt their sorrow and their frustration trapped behind the portal. Generations of them, some born behind the portal and unable to ever leave. Some had died, while others had learned to extend their lives. They'd been sucked in and trapped, leaving no one on the other side who could hear them, their planet devoid of cytonics for centuries.
Until now, one of them whispered.
I could feel their hope and their disbelief. And then, suddenly, a familiar voice filled my mind.
It's about scudding time you listened, Spensa's grandmother said. I am too old to be trapped in here for eternity with gerbils, and too set in my ways to live to be 200, even if I could figure out what in the stars they're talking about.
Scud. Gran-Gran, I said. Are you in there? We found your body and Cobb's. How did you...
I was trying to follow the voices, Gran-Gran said, and I followed them all right, into the same scudding trap. Never listen to a rodent who asks for your help. Let that be a lesson.
I supposed I had volunteered to help rodents, but I didn't regret it. Is Cobb okay? I asked.
He is here, Gran-Gran said, growing grumpier by the hour. The Kitson say they're not sure our bodies could have survived out there. They say we might be dead.
You're not dead, I said. But why did this happen?
I couldn't figure out how to pinpoint a location to hyperjump to, Gran-Gran said, but I could hear the voices calling to me, so I tried to go to them instead.
Oh, stars. I haven't been able to figure out how to do that either, I said. It doesn't make sense when Alanik describes it. That was clever, trying to move toward the voices instead.
It would have been, Gran-Gran said, except when we got here, our bodies were gone.
They're trapped outside the portal, I said. This was why we had to hyperjump to places we knew, or places we could see. Gran-Gran had tried to go somewhere unfamiliar, somewhere she couldn't physically hyperjump to, and it had only partially worked. I think trying to hyperjump through the portal severed your soul in half.
Sounds like the sort of thing that could kill a person, Gran-Gran said.
That it did, though it hadn't killed them yet. But Scud, how long could they survive like this, half in and half out of the nowhere? I wouldn't have thought such a thing was possible. I could see the other side of the portal in my mind now. It looked like Evershore, a sandy island in an ocean of nothing. It looked oddly corporeal for a place called the Nowhere. I understood. They accidentally closed the door behind them, I said. They were trapped, with no one left on this side to let them through. They'd remained there, huddled together, for so many years. Scud, that was incredible. The knowledge these Kitson must have. Through the portal, I could feel the despair of the Kitson as their kinsmen died, their fear that they would all perish behind the portal, that their long life would run out, that they didn't have enough people to breed and sustain their numbers, that the line of Kitson Cytonics would come to an end, long after the rest of their people had supposed it had. They'd been searching for help for so long, and now they were weary. So weary. Gran-Gran was among them, and they were afraid her end would come even faster, separated from her body as she was. Juno had piled several books onto his platform, so many that he barely fit in the center in his suit of power armor. He held one of the new books open in his gauntleted paws, floating over to me.
"The waves of the ocean wash upon you," Juno said.
"I thought you didn't have a meditation for this," I said.
"I don't," he said. "But the last one seemed to help you, even though it was not specific. This is a meditation for the ages, one that is meant to sharpen your mind and your focus, to bring out your best potential. I don't have the answer for you, but you may find the answer for yourself."
Huh.
"Should I go on?"
Juno asked. I didn't see what it could hurt. "Yes," I said.
"The waves of the ocean wash upon you, but they have no power to drag you away. You are one with the waves, and you are one with yourself. You are eternal, relentless as the rising sun. Your heart beats with the rhythm of the stars."
I still wasn't relaxed. When was the last scudding time I had been relaxed? But I could hear it, the rhythm Juno was talking about, the vibration of the stars, the heartbeat of the universe. I could hear it in the Tanix and in the battle above. I could feel it from the portal, brimming with power. I felt a nudge at the edge of my mind. It was that image of Spensa again, lost and alone. No, not alone. Doomslug was with her, and Embot, though I didn't know how that worked if Embot's ship had been dismantled by the superiority. I couldn't help Spensa, couldn't reach her. I didn't know how to do anything except take care of her, I said to Doomslug. And then something shifted, and Doomslug teased a thread out of Spensa's thoughts and passed it on to me, clear and powerful as anything. Stars. It was her memory of me. She was forgetting herself, her friends, her family, everything. But she still remembered me. She cared about me, deeply, and with a ferocity that was totally and uniquely Spin. That made me incredibly lucky, more so than I'd ever be able to express. I felt a swell of agreement from Doomslug. She would take care of Spensa, but it was accompanied by gratitude that I already was. Thank you, I said. I tried to hold on to that snatch of memory, to cling to what little I had left of Spensa, not sure if I'd ever see her again. But it was slipping away, along with Doomslug, back into the nowhere. Doomslug faded, but the portal remained, pulsing with power, with a rhythm all its own, a rhythm that felt familiar, somehow, like a melody I'd heard before.
You yield to the universe, Juno went on, though I'd missed some of what he said. Not because of its power, but because of your wisdom. You yield power over all things, and in doing so, become one with the stars.
I felt the impenetrability of the portal, the lock that kept me from pushing through. I didn't know if I could fall through, or if it prevented entry from both sides. I couldn't open the portal, I realized, because I lacked the key. Similar to the impression that let us use our powers inside a cytonic inhibitor, there was some kind of cytonic vibration that would open the portal, letting the Kitsin pass through. Juno, I said, do your people have any kind of recordings from the days before the Kitsin cytonics disappeared? Some kind of database or digital records?
We do not, Juno said. We lost much when we were colonized, and more in the War of Liberation.
Stars. I didn't even know if such a recording had ever existed. The Kitsin had become stuck, after all. They might never have been fully capable of traveling in and out. I didn't know how to get in and out of a portal, and since Alanik hadn't recognized it, she wouldn't know either. She hadn't even been able to hear the Kitsin. I could feel the sense of failure pushing in around the edges, the sense that I never had enough to give, never had the right pieces at the right moments to really come through for the people I cared about. FM was right, though. Sometimes I did. But the failures loomed so much larger than the successes that it was easy to forget.
You are completely relaxed, Juno said.
I tried to relax. I didn't need to solve all the problems on my own. I was supposed to lean on the people around me for help. And while no one on this side of the portal had the information I needed, I want to help you, I said, but I don't know how to open this portal. I felt despair from the other side, weariness, the burden of centuries spent watching, wondering, hoping, and then losing hope, and struggling to find it again and again. A picture formed in my mind, a wrinkled Kitsin watching her friends and loved ones die, knowing others were dying on the other side of the portal as time passed, knowing she would never see them again. The occasional glimpse of a cytonic nearby, probably superiority ships visiting the planet, but they never heard, and they never came to help. Then a voice, far away, a woman who had spent her lifetime listening, finally heard them. And now she was trapped somehow, strangely separated from her body. Regret, a sense that reaching out was selfish, because she and Cobb had now suffered their same fate.
The stars shine upon you, an ancient light in the darkness, Juno continued. The darkness widens to swallow them, but they shine endlessly on.
We're going to get you out, I said. It was a promise I didn't know I could keep, more a message of determination than of certainty.
How did you get in there?
What followed wasn't words so much as images. A summit. A room full of Kitsin, each bringing their unique talents, knowledge, and abilities. They meditated together, sharing their knowledge, their scribes writing furiously to contain it all. They toyed with the threads of the universe, the barrier between our world and the nowhere. I could feel the memories now, not only from the old Kitson, but embedded in the portal itself, as if it were made of experiences. Together, the Kitson had picked at the boundary, separated the threads. They'd meant only to figure out how to visit that realm for a time, the way the legend said their people did when they first met humans. But instead, they opened the gaping maw of nothingness, and it swallowed them all, along with a large chunk of their world. Stars, the chasm this library was built in. It was formed when the Kitson left the somewhere, taking the stone of the cliffs with them.
You look up at their lights, Juno said, letting their vibrations wash over you. You too are eternal like the stars, a piece of the endless something that makes space for the nothing, but never yields to it.
I didn't know what that meant, but I tried not to focus too hard on it. I concentrated instead on the threads that made up the border, infused with memory, vibrating so strongly as if the nowhere wanted to burst out of the portal. I didn't want it to swallow Dreamspring, didn't want to open the entire thing. Just enough for those trapped on the other side to come through. I could feel Gran-Gran listening, noticing what I was doing as I began to manipulate the threads. The way Alanique described the boundary, it was like listening to a description of an ocean when I was young. I never really understood until I saw it for myself. But I could feel the boundary between the realms. I might not be able to carry myself through, but here I had power.
I tried to give you the story you needed, Gran-Gran said. I told you to imagine yourself flying among the stars.
I remembered Gran-Gran's story about how disobeying orders could be the right thing to do. Wait until you hear what I've done, I said.
I can see it, she said. I tried to give you the story you needed, but perhaps you found your own story after all.
Had I? I could feel the way the threads of the boundary wove together, sealing the portal. I didn't know how to move them, but I focused on them the way I had the birds. That image wasn't quite right for this, so I tried vines all woven together, creating a wall between us and them. I didn't want to cut the vines down, only move a few aside, forming a small area where the Kitson could return, where Gran-Gran and Cobb could slip through.
You are the light and the darkness, Juno said. You are the place where the two worlds meet, the intersection of what is and what could be.
Spensa flies among the stars, Gran-Gran said. But you build things up from the ground. She is a warrior, and you are a defender. It's a different kind of story.
I can't protect them all, I said.
You can't, Gran-Gran said. We all have our own burdens, even if we carry them differently.
I thought about the way I'd lost it in the Senate meeting. I'm not carrying mine well, I said.
Ah, Gran-Gran said. Well, you're not alone in that.
I hated it. I wanted to get it right, to get everything right. But maybe sometimes there was no right. There was only the best I could do. I pictured the vines and touched them each in turn, trying to see which would shift and which held fast. I was able to bring one to the side, creating the smallest part in the jungle of them. But there were more vines on the other side, ones I couldn't reach. I couldn't do this alone. I needed help. I reached out to the old Kitson on the other side of the portal, trying to show her what I saw. Her mind seemed to receive it, as if she also knew the barrier well, had been over these same vines thousands of times. I showed her the ones I could move, and I felt her study them. And then the ones on the other side began to shift. I focused on the vines I could control, feeling the vibrations, holding fast the ones that supported the entire structure, while manipulating those that only supported tiny bits of it.
You are completely relaxed, Juno said.
I breathed in rhythm with the vibrations. I wasn't relaxed,
but I was calm. I was at peace. I was the power. And then all at once, the smooth surface of the portal cracked open, and a Kitsun hobbled through. Her fur was graying, and her skin was so wrinkled it folded down over her eyes. She pushed it back and looked up at us. And then, a dozen more followed. Chapter 18. More Kitsun crowded into the area in front of the portal, all blinking at each other and at us. Several of them hummed with a cytonic vibration, though some of the younger-looking ones didn't. Non-cytonics who'd been born on the other side of the portal, who'd lived their whole lives there. Juno nearly fell off his platform. He bumped his stack of books and had to snatch at them to keep them from sliding over the edge. He started fumbling through his book, like perhaps he needed a meditation to calm himself.
Human, the one with the wrinkled skin said to me. Are you the one who released us?
Yes, I said. I can't believe that worked. I looked down at Cobb and Gran-Gran, but they lay still with their eyes closed. Scud, had it not worked for them? No. Wait, I could feel something. A signature emanating from Gran-Gran. That had to mean... Cobb stirred, and then he coughed. Kel bent over the screen that showed his vitals. Is he okay? I asked. He's improving, Kel said. Will he wake up? I don't know, but if he does, he'll be in no condition to help. We should get them home to Detritus. Stars. Of course he wouldn't be in any condition to lead. He'd spent the last 2 days with his mind disconnected from his body. A loud boom sounded through the walls of the library, as if the stone above us had been struck, probably by a falling starfighter. Zing turned the radio back on, and the airwaves were a mess of talking. I didn't want to take the time to sort that out. Alanik, I said, how's it going with those reinforcements?
The Erdale flights have joined the battle, she said. What are you doing down there?
Found us some more backup, I said. Kuna had bent down to the level of some of the Kitsun cytonics and was conversing with them quietly. I hoped to all the stars in the sky they weren't calling them lesser.
That's good, because we need help.
Scud. Sit rep?
3 more carrier ships. No planetary weapons yet, but Arturo is worried. Something about a bomb.
Oh no. What bomb?
He said he spotted a ship with a strange flight pattern.
My whole body went cold. I focused, widening my reach. And I found the impressions again. The minds of the pilots, all flying around in what felt like disarray. No, there was a method to it. Arturo had them divided into flanking groups, and the flights were working together, though I couldn't pinpoint the strategy at a glance. If Arturo had seen what I thought he'd seen, I didn't have time to consider it. I found his mind flying near Alanik. As I drew closer, I could feel his focus, his determination, and his terror. He didn't know where I was, wasn't sure what they should do. He spotted that ship again, moving slowly in a familiar pattern he'd never wanted to see again. I could see it in his mind. We'd fought a lot of those ships in our days as cadets, though we hadn't seen one since we'd driven the Krell away from the surface of Detritus. It looked like a lifebuster. Amphi, I said. I felt Arturo startle.
Jerkface, he said. Are you in my scudding head?
Apparently, I said. You saw a lifebuster?